Hi there. What? Hi, what? Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I know. Yeah? What? No, we actually have a public hearing before the pledge. Okay, how do you sit down? Good evening. Our first order of business is a public hearing on the 2011-2012 Tompkins Cortland Community College operating budget. Is there anyone who'd like to address the legislature and the public? President Haynes, would you like to say anything? Oh, I've just opened the public hearing on your budget. Would you like to say anything?
Certainly be happy to give a short overview if you'd like me to, or just answer questions if anybody in the audience here has anything they'd like to ask me about.
Well, this is a public hearing, so if anybody has questions, they can ask when the resolution comes to you. But if there's does anybody want to speak on the budget? Okay, we figured, Carl, you're going to say we should vote for it. Okay. All right. Thank you all. Close the public hearing. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call of members.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Present.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsee?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
15 members present.
Thank you. And next, proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
Thank you, Kathy. I am pleased that tonight we have our poet laureate, Gail Holst Warhoft, who has prepared something for us tonight. So, Gail, if you would come to the microphone. Welcome. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me here. I have two short poems I'd like to read. I was going to read just one, but given that I understand there is some controversial material coming up later on in this meeting, I would like to read a little poem about the nature of strife. It's called Loose Strife. Purple on the edge of pink, its tapers light the low places near the highway, blooming before goldenrod and aster. It seemed a harmless visitor, until its invasion began, sweeping cattails and rushes aside, choking the homes of toads, bitterns, and muskrats in a sea of purple flowers. Now it's forbidden to plant this well-named weed. Strife is loosed by nature, and loosed, hard to restrain. And now a little poem, because I do a lot of walking in this area, and I hike on the trails all the year round, about hiking with my husband, and losing the most precious thing for a hiker, my trail map. It's called the Lost Map. It lay beside the trail where I dropped it 3 weeks ago on Christmas Day. Ice had made the trail treacherous, and you slipped, 1 foot hanging above the gorge where water curdled at the edges of its flow. Fear made me careless of all save footholds on the glazed snow as we edged back to the trailhead. This morning's sun lit patches of snow like sea spume flung on the slope as we retraced our steps beside the gorge, and there it was beside the path, the lost map folded to fit my pocket, and I was blithe with triumph as if a living thing had strayed and not a sheet of paper creased in two, its ink still bright. I'd marked each section of trail, a year's progress left to right across the map, walks for all seasons, sepia to emerald, flame red to gray, nesting herons, spring-startled grouse, scutter of deer, awaking snake. This time, too, when the woods are all ours and a lost map is safe on snow. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dan. Very nice. We really appreciate your contributions to the community. Thank you again. We have a privilege of the floor for the public. I will read your names as they are, as I have their your sheets. If anybody, can you hear me? Is my microphone too soft? It's okay? All right. If anybody hasn't signed up but wants to speak at the end, just you'll have that opportunity at the end of the names who've already signed up. We have a three-minute time limit for everyone, and Kathy here will help you keep track with a sign, so if you could keep your eye on Kathy as you go ahead. I have Sigrid Connors and then Uta Ritz-Deutsch.
Hi, my name is Sigrid Connors, live in Groton, New York, and I work at the Health Department. I'm hoping that you will decide in favor of continuing the public health chalk. We trust that we have given you enough information to make an informed decision. If, however, you decide to divest, please keep in mind services for our patients with high-level care needs may not be available at the same level sufficient to keep people in their home, especially those with little or no family supports. Our public safety net will be gone, and we may find the same taxpayer dollars used to subsidize this care now shift to another higher cost or to another nursing home. If you divest, we will no longer be able to assist if our community has a shortage of home care services. We will lose 10 nurses to respond to critical events in our community, such as a pandemic event, and we will no longer be able to staff a functional needs emergency shelter. I know the decision process has been difficult for you. It has been especially difficult for our staff. But I can say with assurance that it has not been difficult for our patients, because throughout this process, our staff has focused on giving them the care they need. Because for 45 years, this is what our program has been all about. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Sigrid. Let's read it down. I'm really going to ask that we not have applause, please. It's going to be a long meeting, as it is. Uta Ritz-Deutsch and then Jamaica Breedlove.
Greetings. It's good to see all of you. As you know, my name is Uta Ritz-Deutsch. I'm with the Tompkins County Immigrant Rights Coalition. And I've spoken to you before, and I'm sure you have a lot of information available. I'm here once again to urge you to pass a resolution taking a stand on the Secure Communities Program. And I would just like to give you one little example of how the present immigration policy is affecting people. Now, that's not necessarily just ESCOM, but the other enforcement tools as well. Just last month in Cortland, a Chinese restaurant owner who's been in this country for 12 years got deported. From the time he entered this country, he tried to become quote-unquote legal, to do everything right, you know, go through the paperwork, petition his case. He was denied, he appealed, and so on. He is now not only married, he has two U.S. citizen children. He ran a business. He employed 8 to 10 people. His wife may be deported next. Their children are 7 and 9 years old. What will become of them? They will either have to leave this country to be with their parents or find alternatives here. This is just one example, just a few miles down the road within the last few weeks, and I could give you other stories and very different types of stories. I will actually give you another quick one. At Tompkins-Cortland Community College, where I also teach, a student there is right now, 19 years old, looking at his mother being deported. He's the oldest of 5 U.S. citizen children. If she gets deported, it's going to be his responsibility to take care of the other 4 siblings. Okay, his college career is going to be done with. So these are just 2 examples, again, very close to here, just happening within the last month or so. And please keep that in mind when you take a stand on ESCOM. You're doing a very important thing. And if you're letting the governor know that you support a rescinding of the program, this is what he needs to hear from upstate, because he is going to get a backlash for taking a stand. So I encourage you to do that, and I applaud you for doing that. And thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. Jamaica Breedlove, and then Paul Lucas.
My name is Jamaica Breedlove. I work for the WIC program at the Health Department. But I'm here tonight to talk to you or ask you about the CHA, selling the CHA. My question is, would it be to save money, to make money? And as someone who owns a home in this county, I've many times considered selling my home to try and get out of the taxes that are so expensive. And now I have a daughter who's graduating from high school, and I don't have invested interest in those people coming up behind her. But the fact is that if I sell my home, I don't have any investment at all. So with the CHA, with there being so many people selling their CHAs at this time, are we not going the wrong direction? Shouldn't we not support building up the CHA so that next year, if we need an investment, then we look at it being more of a valuable investment rather than being a smaller investment at this time? And that's just something that I would ask you to consider. It's a buyer's market right now instead of a seller's market. Do we want to make more of our investment? And if we can't, if we got $1 million for it, if we got half of that $1 million out of it after all of our expenses were paid, we still would be many millions short. Next year it's supposed to be even worse. Where would our investment be better served if we sold it at a more profitable rate than we can sell it this year? Thank you for your consideration.
Paul Lucas. I'm sorry, Paula Lucas, and then Jennifer Greyer.
Hello, I'm Paula Lucas. I relocated back to Ithaca 6 years ago to assist my elderly parents who own a home in Cougar Heights. They've owned their home since 1980. After my own surgery, I was totally homebound for 3 weeks. I could not even ride in a car, and I had no one in my home to care for me. I became a client of the Tompkins County Home Care Division. My weekly services included blood draws, wound treatment, and physical therapy. In the last 4 years, my father has received services from the home care on 2 occasions after being hospitalized in ICU. He was too sick and weak to manage personal hygiene, much less leave home for medical monitoring. My dad and I are fortunate to have good health insurance. We are the type of patient the medical community loves to service. I am certain we would not have recovered as well or as quickly had we not been able to return to the comforts of our home and our own bed. If you've ever been hospitalized, you can empathize with how exhausted you can become from the lack of rest. I am not old enough for Medicare, and if I should lose my health insurance, I would be panicked if I had another medical condition which left me homebound. If I had no insurance, I'm not sure I'd be readily admitted into a private agency service. You can talk about state monitoring of private agencies, but we all know the process won't work fast enough for a person who has an immediate need, not to mention when one is sick and incapacitated, there just is not enough energy to make demands. Okay, we get it. We are in a financial crisis on the state and county level, and programs need to be cut and eliminated. But have you really looked at all the county programs and services? Have the CHAW programs been given the chance to implement changes which can produce the revenue needed to break even? Have you considered that we have a limited number of nursing home and hospital beds, unlike other counties in near major metropolitan areas? Last year, my father was in the ER for 20 hours before a bed became available. In summary, I hope you carefully thought about the repercussions to this community should you eliminate the county CHAW programs. Thank you.
Jennifer Greyer and then Dr. Klapek.
My name is Jennifer Greer, and I am the billing supervisor in home care. I have worked in home care for over 11 years, and with my 11 years come seniority rights that give me the freedom to speak as an advocate for our patients and not for my job. During this process of the CHAW evaluation, we have listened to other agencies and received input from the state about the regulations in place designed to protect the patients. An agency cannot refuse to serve a client because of the profitability of a case or the patient's ability to pay. We have given you statistics about patients that we have and will continue to serve safely at home when other agencies may not attempt this. Other agencies do not service these kinds of clients, and the patients will either end up without services that they need or in a nursing home. Who will speak for these patients when they cannot? The family is too overwhelmed just to make sure mom's needs are met. Do you know where to make a complaint in an example like this? Would you know what services mom is entitled to receive at home after having a stroke or a heart attack? An agency can also refuse a case based on ability to staff. So far this year, we've turned away at least 50 clients based on ability to staff, and no one from the state has come to see if our resources are indeed limited. They do not follow up on all cases that are refused. We have also heard that the hospital would get involved and be an advocate for the patients. In my 11 years, only once has the state and the hospital gotten involved when patients could not receive home care. We have heard arguments that the private sector can do it just as well, and if not, the state and federal government will step in. So I ask you to consider, is it not possible that the world and systems are flawed, as you have seen for yourselves, in unfunded mandates and unrealistic expectations from the state? Maybe the stories presented by the other parties are idealistic and exist only in a perfect world. You have the difficult decision to figure out what is best for the taxpayers of this county, but for our patients as well. Thank you.
Dr. William Klapek and then Shankly DeMarco.
Good evening, and thanks for a couple of minutes. I'd like to speak to the CHAW as medical director of the County Health Department, and I'd like to just remind you of some history. In about 1999, the county had to make a paradigm shift in preparedness. Prior to that date, disasters were physical events that might also have some impacts on human health. Disasters were discrete events occurring at one day, at one time, and required a response limited to a short time frame. After 1999, the scope of disaster preparedness changed. Initially, the risk of pandemic influenza forced the shift in planning, and later, bioterrorism did also. The health department led the way in bringing together law enforcement, public works, the attorney's office, medical examiner, and many others to consider events where human disease and death are the principal issue and physical events are secondary. The events of the new paradigm unfold over weeks and months, require protracted resources, and are heavily dependent on skilled nurses, doctors, environmental professionals, and pose unique stresses upon all the responders, law enforcement, public works, public health information, and others. The staff and resources of the health department are a backbone of the county's preparedness to deal with these events. And the staff of the CHA are amongst those resources which are shifted within the department when response is required, just as they were in the H1N1 event of just the past couple of years. Divestiture obviously would mean removal of those resources. So before you tonight, needless to say, is a decision. In part, that decision relates to the use of tax monies for preparedness. I personally believe that it's the right and proper role of government to invest in preparedness of this type. The private sector can't be relied upon at such times. They have their hands full with priorities that also are under stress at stressful times. Continuation of the CHA would enhance the resources for preparedness. Thanks for your attention.
Questions, Lisa Marco, then Teresa Ault.
Hello, I'm Chantelise DeMarco. I'm the CSEA White Collar President, and I proudly stand here representing the members of the Health Department who work in the Home Care Division, as well as all Tompkins County White Collar employees. These employees who work in the CHA have worked hard to advocate for their patients, not for their jobs. The stories they tell you are about their patients and about what they feel those patients will lose in the private sector. You may not agree with them, and that is your choice. That's the decision that you need to grapple with here today. We are all a part of your community, whether we live here or work here. We are a part of the community, and you need to decide what this means to you and whether the CHA fits into that part of your community as a public service. What do your vulnerable constituents need? Should they be served by home care that is public or private is your difficult decision to make. We feel that the public home care division adds value to this community in more ways than one, in many ways that Dr. Klapek just described in a pandemic or in other sorts of emergency situations, we would rely upon ourselves instead of the private sector to be there for all of our taxpayers. I just want to leave you with something that has been waking me up every day since this has really been going on, and it's just a little quote. A little conscience now and then is relished by the wisest men. Thank you.
Teresa Ault and Tomo Shibata.
I'm Teresa Ault. I live in College Town. I'm here to address the question of continuing the county's certified home health agency. I have written to all of you, and I want to emphasize that whichever way you vote, I won't hold it against you. It is completely unfair that you are being forced to vote on this under these circumstances. I won't describe the circumstances. Martha Robertson has done a good job doing that, Will Burbank, Nate Shinagawa, Dooley Keefe, or Kathy Luz Herrera, and many others also have expressed constructive perspectives. I want to talk around the issue a bit. I lay the blame for this no-win situation squarely on the governor and the state Senate for simultaneously pandering to voters with a 2% property tax cap and, at the same time, cutting taxes to the very richest in the state so that the county cannot, so that the state is not going to help the county survive. In these years, when the well-to-do, the rich, and especially the super-rich have been taking home an ever-increasing share of the before-tax income and wealth, it's a matter of state and national survival that they should pay higher taxes to help cover the necessities like home health care, that the rest of us can no longer afford. Another point, whatever the decision on this specific question, privatization must not become the model or the precedent. It only rarely can reduce costs. It often raises real costs or subtly reduces services. Third point, I want to underscore, and this is more for the audience, that I only realized quite late in the game that we're not talking about the home health aides who do the daily grunt work that keeps people alive and, to the extent possible, well. The aides are not hired by the CHA. We do need to keep them in mind, too, and we need to assure that they're adequately compensated. And finally, we, county government and citizens together, may need to start thinking about a Wisconsin moment. A point at which we declare together that we have lost all confidence in the state and are simply not going to cooperate. But that would require a higher level of solidarity than we have yet achieved here. Thank you.
Thomas Shibata is the last person signed up.
Local law enforcement cannot believe my complaints of organized stalking assaults, which include electronic assaults at my residence committed with electronic weapons from dark, empty townhouses adjacent to my 109 Maple Ave every night, organized non-lethal poisoning, organized perjury, which can be readily done with the collaboration of a corrupt police officer, frequent frequently lost or delayed important airmails, and the frequent prevention of publications and employment. In April 2010, out of blue, I visited and talked to one of those whom I saw pouring something into my soup when I was visiting her, which soon caused neurological symptoms concerning organized stalking torture in general. During this talk at her residence in Ithaca, her friend overheard my conversation and said that her friend who was at her residence, and he worked closely and directly under a lieutenant or capo of the mafia, or like La Cosa Nostra, whose business area included Ithaca and nearby larger cities like Syracuse in upstate New York, and who was placing a hit on me. According to this associate of La Cosa Nostra, probably a Genovese family, this capo receives a grand total of $300,000 upon the completion of his hidden slow kill enterprise from his overseas clients in Lund, Sweden, where I lived until a few years ago, and where my organized stalking started immediately after I filed a police report against a university student whose parents turned out to be the mafia affiliates. My invisible torture slow execution, currently carried out by the globalized mafia, marks a method routinely used to rigorously solidify and purify the identity of the client's community in Sweden. A council member of a town called Markaryd in Sweden said during my telephone conversation in February 2009 that a foreign person of color was hunted down and tortured across the town of Lund, just like myself, and eventually this scapegoat was poisoned to death by corrupt law enforcement officers 15 years ago. No media reported this case, and no investigation took place. The mafia's extraordinary resilience stems from its ingeniousness in contriving and hiding new, increasingly sophisticated forms and techniques of organized crime, responding to the given techniques of crime prevention and law enforcement at the moment when law enforcement recognizes the current forms and tactics of organized criminal enterprises. The given technique of crime prevention today is community policing, of which organized stalking marks an abusive variant. The local police and the FBI ought to be aware of their own belatedness in recognizing new forms of organized crime, especially in light of La Cosa Nostra's increasingly sophisticated manipulative intelligence to render their organized violence invisible and unbelievable. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to address the legislature? All right, I'm not sure whether somebody does. Oh, sorry, okay.
Sorry, I didn't hear. My name is Robin Soto, and I am one of the owners and the manager.
No, push the microphone up
high. Put the mic.
Bend it up.
Yes, there you go.
And could you let us know where you live?
Okay. Is that better?
Yes.
My name is Robin Soto. I live in Newfield, and I work in Ithaca. I'm one of the owners and the nursing supervisor for a licensed home care agency here called Red Moon Caregivers. We work and have worked since we first began business here with the health department, and it has been an honor and a privilege to do that. They set the bar really high. It's my understanding that public health, the role of public health is to serve people who have resources and options, like many of us here in this room perhaps do, and those who don't have those resources or options. We have shared many of those type of clients with the health department, and I have seen them take care with the same kind of quality and attention that they do for every one of their clients, those who I think of as the forgotten people. I hear that in other counties where the public health CHAs have been privatized, that things are going well. But I question whether we really have the information and the statistics that can really qualify that. I think that there will be a pretty serious trickle-down effect within 5 to 10 years, and we'll just continue to magnify after that point in time, particularly with the boomers aging and the retired population soaring, and obesity being a pandemic in this country and this county, and all of the medical concerns that come with that. But I feel like we are privileged to be able to work with the folks at the health department, and they're the people that as a business we turn to when we feel like we're stuck in caring for somebody, not knowing for sure how to address a particular problem. They're an incredible resource. They have collectively probably several hundred years of experience, and that's a value that I feel like this county is losing. My grandmother aged and passed away in this county, and they helped take care of her, and my mother will be in the same position shortly. So there's certainly a personal piece to this as well for us. I think we all have family, we all have parents, and we all have ourselves that to think about. So it hits a real personal note. As some of the speakers have touched on, I know that this is there's a very serious fiscal crisis that we're facing, and I am happy that I'm not in your shoes to have to make the decisions about where to cut those corners. I just think that when a society cuts corners, when it comes to the care of elders and the care of our children, we're destroying our society in a very painful and slow sort of way, because the elders and the children don't necessarily have a voice to speak as clearly as those of us in the middle do.
Please wrap up.
Okay. I have several statements from some of the clients of the health department.
Well, it's too late for that. If you want to hand those in, that'd be fine.
Okay, can I just read one, or am I completely out of time?
You're over time, right?
Okay, I will hand them in then.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
All right, is there anyone else who'd like to speak? All right, I don't see any municipal official there, but in the audience, but there might be. Is there a wife of a municipal official who'd like to address the legislature? All right, then, legislator privilege of the floor. I'd like to start with Pat Pryor.
As I was driving down here tonight, and my thoughts turned to the months that I have been on the legislature and the various young people that we have recognized with our Distinguished Youth Award. And it occurred to me that when you do something like this as a part of a routine, after a while, sometimes I think we don't stop to think of the significance of what we're doing. And I was reminded that each time we recognize a young person, we also need to remember that behind that young person stands a family, stands a community, and stands a school system. And I think it's a real tribute to our entire county that we do this program. And I would just like to recognize that I think that this is an important part of our function, and I'm pleased to be able to be a part of it. So I'd like to invite Nina Lindberg and the people who have come here with her tonight to come forward. This is Nina Lindberg from Lansing High School, and in a minute I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the statement that was provided for me as to why Nina was nominated. But I'd like to have the principal of the Lansing High School, Eric Hart, introduce the members of the faculty and Nina's family that are also here tonight.
Thanks, Pat. I'd like to introduce Benita and Mike Lindberg, her parents. And I'd like to introduce Kathy Mosley, who is senior class officer. And I'd also like to, And I'd like to introduce Andy Husky, who's a coach, an English 11 teacher, and a mentor to Nina.
And this, of course, is Nina. So, this letter of nomination comes from Eric and from Kathy Mosley. We would like to nominate Nina Lindberg, senior class president of Lansing High School, for the Distinguished Youth Award. Nina is a very accomplished young woman who has demonstrated leadership and commitment to her community throughout her high school career. In addition to her selection by her classmates as senior class president, Nina's personal accomplishments include participation in orchestra, advanced placement art classes, the New York State History Bowl, the Bobcat newspaper, three sports teams, soccer, basketball, and softball, National Honor Society, and Student Council. Additionally, understanding that events outside of our community can have a tremendous impact locally, Nina entered and won a YouTube competition in New York State by creating a video attempting to persuade Governor Cuomo to stop cuts to local school budgets. She's done all this while maintaining her position on the high honor roll. During her junior year, Nina went on a mission trip over spring break, spending her own vacation working to help individuals living in poorer conditions right here within the United States. Upon her return, she wrote an article on her experience so that others might be inclined to do community service also. Nina is a pay-it-forward kind of gal. During the summer before her senior year, Lansing High was asked to consider doing a fundraiser to support Camp Good Days, a camp located near Rochester, New York, whose mission is to support children with cancer and their families. As senior class president, Nina volunteered to take on the task. Nina was the point person for the entire event, planning and successfully implementing what became a community event. She designed the logo called Night of Life and successfully brought together several community groups to participate and help. She found people to speak at an assembly for students, designed 7 hours of entertainment, including a carnival for little kids, a concert for adolescents, and entertainment and music by the superintendent's band for the adult crowd. While organizing and directing the fun, she found time to play in her own band. At the end of the event, Camp Good Days received a donation from the Lansing senior class for over $2,250. Nina is an amazing young person. Her vision for organizing and orchestrating successful events to benefit others and her leadership role in and around the Lansing High School community make her, we feel, very well qualified to be a recipient of the county's Distinguished Youth Award. Congratulations. This is a plaque for Nina, which says, in recognition of your outstanding commitment to your community, June 2011. And this award has been sponsored by Bangs Ambulance, Tompkins County Legislature, the Cuga Radio Group, Purity Ice Cream, and AMB Awards and Engraving. And we have a few other goodies here. These are things for you and to share with some of your other senior class officers, if you'd like, or whoever. Would you like to say a couple words?
I guess I should probably just thank the people over here who are my backbone. I have an amazing community at Lansing and have been highly, highly supported, and I just really want to thank them because they are the reason why I'm able to do all of these things successfully without imploding.
Thank you, Nina, and everyone. Thank you, Pat. Any other legislators like to address us? Hold on, Pat. Anybody else? Carol? Carol, Frank, Will?
Yeah. I want to give you your monthly update. I try to do only monthly rather than every time update on gas drilling. I would ask that the chair of the legislature consider writing two letters on our behalf, or at least expressing, I think, I don't know that we need to introduce a resolution here, but there are two situations that have come up that are timely. And one is that the Department of Energy has a panel that is considering the effects of hydraulic fracturing, and that panel is conducting hearings. They conducted a hearing recently in Pennsylvania, and it has turned out that panel that has seven members, six of whom, it turns out, have very serious ties to the gas industry. We're talking directors of companies, chairs of companies, and it does not seem like a fair and balanced panel. There's more information that I think our chair circulated, and I would be happy to have my name be added to anything that you draft, and I hope that you'll look into that one. The other is that after all our calls to the governor of New York and to the DEC, the state of New York, to make sure that they considered all factors as they come out with the new draft of the supplemental generic environmental impact statement, under which terms the state will proceed with drilling. And that seemed like that was happening, and that they were going to take the time necessary. The governor has called on the commissioner, Martins, to come out by July 1st. I've heard conflicting things about whether that will happen or not. Certainly this legislature has weighed in on the past about how we felt about the things that needed to be investigated. We've had many incredible people in our community weighing in, and experts in our community weighing in on all aspects of this. The Water Resources Council just this week, where really Frank's committee is just a step ahead of the rest of us. They have already taken the elements of the EIS from last time and divvied up who's going to comment on the new draft of which section. The whole TCOG task force is weighing in and is prepared to weigh in. Our own county assessment department and the committee that's been working to look at the financial effects has put out a serious call to the governor and to the assembly and legislature and Senate to look into financial impacts that people I've talked about here before. It seemed like the governor was doing that. I have a call scheduled. I've got a call back from the governor's office from the Assistant Secretary for Economic Development. They are going to be talking to a group of our county professionals on Monday. Some of the work that we've talked about our committees, our need to have filing within 30 days, that we can't know how to assess the property rolls fairly without some information. It seemed like they were pursuing that. I don't get that on the one hand they're pursuing it and telling us they're pursuing it. On the other hand, they're going to make a decision by July 1st when our conference call is June 27th. So I urge the chair of the legislature to draft a letter on that account as well and call for a more serious look. And I have and I'm happy to answer questions now or later about the work of any of these various committees I've been trying to keep in touch with. Thanks.
Thank you, Carol. I will work on a letter. Okay. Frank, Will, and Pat is what I have.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to piggyback on something Carol mentioned. Yesterday at the Water Resources Council meeting, we did anticipate that the state will be releasing the – I always mess this up – the DGIS, whatever, and the date, as Carol mentioned, anticipating that it'll be July 1st, we're going under the assumption that we will only have 30 days to respond. We're hoping that they'll give us the 90 that everyone, including this legislature, has requested we get, but we haven't received any positive feedback on that one. We did form, as Carol mentioned, subcommittees and divvied up the responsibility. I reformed the group that we had a year or so ago when the 800-pager came out, so we'll be ready, I hope, for action. In that same regard, I would ask perhaps Will, as our representative to the Board of Health, mobilize the Board of Health. They were pretty active the last time in passing a resolution similar to what we're doing, and perhaps get some action going there for review. I noticed Dr. Klapek is here, maybe might be able to spur them into action in your best eloquent way. The other organization, our planning department, was pretty active in doing that too. So just in that venue, I think it would be wise to be poised for us to have some action in 30 days. On another note, and I don't want to steal any of Mike Lane's thunder, but I just wanted to thank Mike Lane for some of us are big fans of libraries. And Saturday, several of us, Dooley, Martha, Mike, myself, I honestly did not see anyone else there, but if there was anyone else there from the legislature, I apologize for not mentioning your name. We had a ball in Dryden. And it was really, really a nice affair. You did such a nice job on the introduction. And I think the speech that you gave will probably – are you going to have Lincoln's Gettysburg Address mounted next to your talk, Mike?
I don't think anybody will pay $3 million for mine.
Anyway, Mike did a heck of a job on Saturday. And the weather cooperator, you should take a bow. And Dryden should take a bow. It was really, really a nice affair.
Thank you, Frank.
And thanks for the invitation. Thanks, Martha.
Thank you, Frank. You don't want to steal Mike's thunder, but you seem to do it every time. Okay, Will, Pat, then Nathan.
Thank you, Martha. I have the honor of being one of our two representatives to the Cooperative Extension of Tompkins County Board, along with Dave. And today, the two of us went down to a meeting of five different counties, executive directors of those counties and or extension directors of those counties and some board members, to talk about a process that has the rather innocuous and innocent sounding name of shared business networks. The basic idea is that Cornell University has been urging or directing counties to come up with ways of cutting costs by sharing resources. And this process started a couple years ago. It has picked up speed, and we are now reaching a critical point. And I think to our credit, our county and adjacent counties have come up with a model for sharing resources that maintained the integrity and independence of the local associations. And I think that's a critical point. As many of you know, this county and other counties give a considerable amount to the local extension. I called Joe at late this afternoon, and he kindly got the number. We're putting in about $1.2 million to the local extension office through direct contracts and contracts with departments. It's a lot of our resources, and we have a very strong interest in making sure that they reflect the needs of our community. And I think to date, they've done a wonderful job. The fear is that we are moving toward a more regional defined extension system, of which the shared business network is the first step. Anyway, I wanted to alert you that we had this meeting. We have come up with a proposal. Cornell will be considering it. I'm hopeful that they will respond with in a positive sense, but we will keep you apprised. And Dave, if I've missed anything, please feel free to chime in.
No, well, I think you covered it quite well. I thought it was a very productive meeting. I think we made some steps forward that we were unable to make at other times, and I have a lot of hope for the future.
Thank you. Thank you. In a completely other note, one of our key staff person, one Bob DeLuca, is going to be hosting a special showing at Cinemopolis this Thursday. It is his favorite film, Cinema Paradiso, the Italian film period piece, and he'll be talking about why he likes it. And if you are free, I can't imagine a more pleasant way to spend a summer evening. Thank you, Martha.
Thank you, Will. Pat.
Thank you, Martha. I wanted to mention that in your red folders tonight, you'll find a copy of the Broadband Committee interim report, and I just want to point that out to you. We're not planning to discuss it this evening, but this coming Thursday, two days from now, there will be a discussion of the Broadband Committee and its activities at the regular TCOG meeting, which starts at, I think, 3 o'clock, if I'm correct, in the old jail conference room, if any of you are interested in attending that. There will also be a regular meeting of the Broadband Committee this next Monday at 5:30 at the Tompkins County Public Library. Those meetings are all open to the public for anyone who would be interested in attending. We are going to be talking about the report at that meeting also. And in terms of the discussion of this report, it's going to go to the GO Committee. And Mike, do you know the date of the next GO meeting? Because I don't have it at hand here. But it will be referred to the GO Committee for their agenda. And eventually, when there are recommendations, those recommendations will eventually come back to the legislature. I'm not expecting that there will necessarily be any recommendations from this interim report, because our work is not yet completed, but you never know. So I just wanted to point that out. The other thing I wanted to mention on a totally different topic, too, is that in the waning days of the legislative session in Albany, one of the pieces of proposed legislation that is tied up with all of the other things that they're trying to wrap up at the end of the session is the push for marriage equality in New York State. And this is a longstanding piece of legislation that those of us who have worked on this issue have supported. And I want to do two things. I want to thank those of you in our community of allies who have joined us in reaching out to our elected officials and urging passage of this legislation. I'd also like to strongly encourage you, if you are willing to do so, to call our Senator, how do you pronounce his last name, Skillos?
Skillos, there's Skillos. The number.
His number is right up here at the front of the room. And it's the Senate Republicans that have to find a way to craft language that we'll get, we need one more vote among the Republicans. We're short one vote of passage at this point. And anything you can do to help us with that would be really greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Pat, thank the Government you. Operations Committee is Thursday, July 21st at 9:30.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. Nathan?
I have two things, one very nice subject and another one a difficult subject. I'll start with the nice one. Okay, I'll start with the nice one. All right. On May 3rd, I attended a meeting of county officials of the White House, and this last Friday I was able to attend another meeting at the White House for young elected officials. And that included me, Dominic Frangillo, Caroline board member, Savante Myrick on city council, city alderman, and Eddie Rooker, who's also a city alderman, both representing the 4th Ward. And we were able to go to the White House last Friday, and we met with Austin Goolsbee, who's the chief of the Council of Economic Advisors for the President. We met with Heather Zakal, who is the climate change deputy assistant to the President on climate change. We met also with other intergovernmental affairs staff at the White House, and of course heard from the President himself as well. The best part about the meeting, though, is we had a lot of time, about an hour, with the President's top climate change person. And to my surprise, fracking was the number one issue that dominated our question and answer period. And that was mostly led by Dominic Frangillo of Caroline, and also a young woman named Natalia Rudiak, who is a Pittsburgh City Councilwoman who's been recently elected. And they really led the charge there, and we pressed the administration on fracking. They talked about, of course, this advisory group that they have to recommend legislation to the states to better regulate fracking. And we also recognize that it has a lot of industry people, and that's definitely a concern that we have with the administration. They did talk about the EPA study that they're continuing to reevaluate and add more to. And then also what was most striking is that Dominic really pressed them on recent studies that show that through the life cycle of fracking, that it's actually worse off in terms of greenhouse gas emissions than things like coal and gas and whatnot. And, I'm sorry, coal and oil. And the administration actually said they know about these studies, they've recognized them, and that they are going to be looking at those studies and reevaluating their greenhouse gas emissions reductions plan. So that's good news, and they were very clear about that part of it. So overall, it was a very good meeting, and I thought that everybody, all the young elected officials that were there, we were from all over the country, but we really appreciated that the administration saw us as valuable people, because oftentimes, you know, we're told that we don't have enough experience, or that we haven't been around the block, or we haven't paid our dues, and it's great that the administration recognizes, you know, that we have something to contribute. The second thing is a tougher issue. As you know, a couple weeks ago, there was the potential hate crime against an Asian American graduate student at Cornell who was beaten up by an individual who was recently arrested, an Ithaca High School student. This is obviously a very tough case, but I wanted to update the community. So the Asian American not really the Ithaca Asian American Association, but I guess you could say members of the Asian American community. We organized two community meetings so far. The first community meeting occurred not this past Monday, but the Monday before. And we had Kathy Zoner, who the CUPD chief there, and District Attorney Gwen Wilkinson were there as well. And they were able to speak to the specifics of the case. And I thought that for the Asian American community, that really meant a lot to us. To hear from these individuals who are investigating and leading prosecution on this case. Yesterday, we also had a meeting where we were able to talk to the victim himself and also developed a plan so that we plan on having a community meeting in July where we're going to ask, I haven't asked Gwen yet, but I'm going to ask Gwen to come to the meeting. District Attorney Gwen Wilkinson also will be bringing in some people from the civil rights community outside of Ithaca to talk about Asian American hate crimes. And then also we will have Professor Shelley Wong, who's been at Cornell for a number of years, who was there during the 2000-2001 period where there were four bias-related incidences against Asian Americans all in the same year. And I think it's important for, often Asian American hate crimes, they don't get as much I guess, publicity, or people don't know that it happens too in this community. And so it's important for us to educate the public about that as well. But overall, I really do appreciate District Attorney Gwen Wilkinson reaching out to the community, the CUPD. Also, President Scordon has reached out to the family, too, to let him know that courthouse resources will be used, you know, to its fullest extent to help support the family. So, you know, this is, I think so far, we're really seeing people in positions of authority really recognizing this is an issue and talking to the community, and that's nice. That's nice.
Thank you, Nathan. Pam.
Thank you, Martha. I have two things. One is that I received a text message today from Leslyn, and I just she let me know. She was actually texting me to ask me who it was I ran against for the state Senate, because Tom O'Mara, who in fact was the person I ran against, had notified her that she had been named a woman of distinction. And so I just wanted to thought that we would all be interested in hearing that Leslyn Yeth gets another accolade. I'm sorry that it yeah. Yes, let's. Yeah. I would rather I gave it to you than him, but that's okay. You still deserve it, whoever.
I don't know anything more about it.
Okay. And then the other thing I just wanted to say was that the garbage transport truck issue is not gone away. It is getting some better from what I'm hearing out there. We had a meeting with DOT up in Skaneateles last week, and they are working on having inspection sites set up on all the sort of two-lane highways that have been affected by this in most cases. I did tell them that I had had complaints on Route 96 going through Tumansburg that there still were trucks going out there, and so they were going to check into that and get back to me. They say by the end of this year, 80% of these trucks will be off our roads and back on the highways, the interstate highways, and that's, of course, just going north. They don't have any control over them coming south. But I think the tendency has been for them to get back on the interstate. So I'm bringing this up because if there are people out there who are aware of this and who are still experiencing problems with the garbage transport trucks, I would appreciate them getting in touch with me so I can keep on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Pam. Before I call on Dooley and Mike, I just want to say for the audience, which I should have said before we started this process, there are a number of items in our agenda where we will march through them, and including the consent agenda, and then I will reshuffle the various resolutions on our agenda tonight. We will take the TC3 resolution, and there's a highway resolution. Those should not be very long, and then we'll go to the resolution on the CHA. So this isn't endless, but so be patient. And we'll be moving you up as early in the meeting as we can. Dooley, and then Mike.
Thank you. I just wanted to explain that on the legislative mail desk in back, there are going to be brochures about the Community Science Institute, which I brought from the Water Resources Council's recent meeting. Steve Penningroth started that organization. It's a 501c3. It works with volunteers who monitor streams. He is available to do all kinds of community work with groups who care about water resources. CSI also has a certified testing laboratory that can test for 35 different bacteria, nutrients, sediment, minerals, and detergents in the water. That's very nice to have one of those locally, too. And he's just been an amazing addition to the community. So you can find these out on your desk. And since Mike is coming after me, I get to also join Frank in saying what a wonderful celebration it was in Dryden. I noted in particular that Mike's speech, which was a very nice history of how this dedication came to happen, was interrupted by applause that he had not expected. And what that meant was the audience was really listening. So Thank you.
Thank you, Dooley. Mike?
Well, thanks for the kind words, Frank and Dooley, and thanks for everyone coming out. We were well represented, and Martha did a great job cutting the ribbon with the rest of us up there. Please come out to Dryden and enjoy the new facility, the Lincoln Center. It'll be there for a long time. It has a lot to offer. It's a good example. It's just one of our wonderful rural libraries, and it deserves everybody's support out there. I continue to be mystified and by the dysfunction of our state government. We watch four or five major pieces of legislation sitting there at the level, the ethics bills, among other things. Not a word about redistricting, independent redistricting commission, and the struggle to get the tax cap through. Tells you that all three units of government at the state level are operating the way they always used to. We'll be seeing three men in a room again and again until we have a constitutional convention. And let's not lose track of that, because it's really the only way we're ever going to see major change. They talked about it here in New York, with Governor Spitzer, and then again with Governor Patterson and Governor Cuomo, but it's the same old thing. So let's hope that it'll change. Let's work for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Leslin, and then Frank.
So Senator O'Mara, on the radio this morning, I'm sure people heard him, in response to the question of, you know, the three men in a room, did say that there are times when there's a need to not be as open, so you can be frank and clear in your discussions, which I found, you know, a little troubling, especially when those decisions that come out of those discussions affect us all in ways that we don't want to be affected.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to take this opportunity, Nathan, thank you for speaking up about the hate crime and the hurting of an Asian American gentleman. And I want to encourage people. It seems like each time something happens is when we're reminded that we need to continue to be engaged in these conversations about how do we protect each other and about how do we work together as a community. And I'm hoping that we don't always have to wait for that, that these conversations will continue to happen. I have been for years seeing when you're going to have your brown bag lunch at your office, make inclusion and support and non-discriminatory actions part of that brown bag conversation, as part of your, you know, margarita night with the girls. Let that be part of the conversation about how do we continue to speak out. And how do we continue to, what? No margarita night? Okay, Kool-Aid night. Kool-Aid night.
Can we have one of those?
Yeah, we can have a Kool-Aid night. Let's continue to have those conversations, not wait until something occurs. It is very, very crucial and very important. Education is just crucial. I'm looking forward to a show, and I don't remember what program it is, might be MSNBC, but a gentleman who really is turning his life around from having been a member of a white supremacist group and saying, I've now come to realize in my, you know, my elder, not elderly, but my adult life, you know, how wrong it has been and how I need to just speak out against it. We're not there. We are not, at least I hope so, members of any supremacist groups, and we can speak out. We can just, like I said, just have the conversation over whatever it is. It's not just me. It's not just Nathan. It's not just, it's all of our issue and all of our problems. These things should not be happening in Tompkins County, in Ithaca. Shouldn't be happening. Our school children need to be educated, and let's keep doing that. speaking of school children, on that note, I do want to say congratulations to the graduates, all the high school students who have graduated and those who are pending graduation, a few more credits shy. I think it is, we're not there yet. I think we're about 79%, and we're shooting for 100%. And so they all need our support. They all need to hear from us. They all need to get those congratulatory messages, even if we put something out in the newspaper, wherever it is, to just say congrats for a job well done. And to the caregivers, God knows I'm pulling my hair out. I have one of them who's graduating next year. who work really hard to make sure these things happen, to our teachers, to our faculty, to the woman serving the lunch, to the man who's doing security, all of them. It really is a feather in all our caps to watch your children graduate. So congrats to all of them. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. Frank, really quickly.
As quickly as you were at the health committee meeting.
Frank already had a turn.
Leslie, congratulations on the recognition.
I don't know what it is, but
sometimes those Republicans come through, right?
I have no idea anything about it. I'll let you all know when I find out.
Two quickies. Thanks, Martha. Seriously. I neglected to mention on the privilege of the floor that later this week on Thursday, put together by Lisa Holmes and the Health Planning Council, Betty Falco, there'll be a collaboration meeting, the start of a series of collaboration meetings of healthcare providers in the community, including the hospital, nursing homes, our CHA, health department, a lot of the support agencies. There's $500 million on the table from the feds in President Obama's healthcare bill, and it's a realignment of the distribution of Medicare. And they're looking for collaborations that when this bill, when Medicare winds down over 5 years, that we might be in line for some of this funding. And I know Lisa's been talking to Joe, and Lisa's been talking to me. We hope to have a presentation at some point at the Health Committee, but because it's a pretty important local initiative, we want to make sure we get a bite at this apple. There is a lot of money on the table. Secondly, Mike forgot to mention an idiosyncrasy. The engineers that did that library were so precise that on Lincoln's birthday, if you go into that library, there's a red circle to the right of the main entrance. And on Lincoln's birthday, they positioned it so that the sun will come through this. It's not a stained window. It's a window with iron-like designs, and will shine on this spot on Lincoln's birthday. I thought that was a pretty unique. Schickel ought to take a bow. He really should. Thanks, Martha.
Thank you, Frank. I didn't know that. I saw that circle.
Well,
and
there
I...
you go. Okay. Some of us, that's trivia. You can use that's that great. In the next game.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay, from my report, I will try to go quickly about Southworth Library. Again, just a tribute, I will say to our president who was self-taught by reading books, and you know, the fact that there's a library now to make it more comfortable and welcoming for children and families in Dryden is really wonderful. The physical addition, the addition itself was designed by Holt Architects, and they'd be even more pleased that we've hired them for several of our projects. It was really exquisite. A little bit of bookkeeping. I have sent a message out about review of the two other direct reports of our finance director and attorney. I asked you all to submit your comments to Stephen Estes. I want to remind you, please, to do that. We need to move that process forward. There's somebody mentioned the TCOG meeting on Thursday. In addition, there will be a presentation about mapping. Another volunteer group has been working for a long time on mapping Tompkins County and what they predict it will look like if they, you know, really look at a very detailed level where drill pads may go. So they'll be presenting. In addition, at 4:30. Which is actually after the formal meeting, Susan Christofferson from Cornell will be presenting, giving a presentation on her research about the economic impacts of drilling on the southern tier of New York. That's the old jail at 4:30 on Thursday. I wanted to mention, you'll see these the phone numbers here. I think I'm just going to leave these phone numbers here for maybe ever. The governor, the Senate leader, and the Assembly speaker really need to hear from the citizens of New York what we're hearing from. You know, and I read an article at 3 o'clock, Mike, about this deal that's about to come together. They've got a framework for the tax cap and rent control, et cetera, and mandate relief. I don't know what they could be thinking about mandate relief. They don't have any money. They didn't put any money in the budget for it, and I can't imagine what they've come up with on a Tuesday in a room together by themselves, what kind of mandate relief they're going to provide for. So
they'll probably tell us they're for it.
They're for it. Well, just like every year they pass another resolution that says no new unfunded mandates, and the next thing they do is cut our reimbursements for the mandates that we have to provide. So I don't know if everybody saw the Ithaca Journal today. It looks better in paper than it does online, but this is the guest editorial, and thank you to Joe for the graphs. Thank you to the Journal for taking so much real estate for this article. But this is what it looks like. You know, people don't know what 90% looks like, I guess. But, you know, this is what our county levies statewide would look like without the mandates. It's a tiny little box. You know, and this is the rest of it is the mandates. So we are going to face a very difficult decision later tonight. And this is the first, as I said at the Health Committee meeting, the first casualty of the tax cap without mandates. So I wanted to also mention an appointment, speaking of mandate relief. The governor earlier in this year had established two teams, a Medicaid redesign team and a mandate relief team, task forces that briefly studied Medicaid and study the other mandates and basically came out with nothing that went into the state budget. But those teams are continuing to meet. I have been appointed to a work group that is a subset of the Medicaid redesign team. It's a work group called, let me find the title, we are supposed to be working on program streamlining and state and local responsibilities. So the meetings are July through September. I'll go. I don't know if it'll lead to anything, but I appreciate being appointed by Steve Aquario, who is one of the co-chairs of that work group. So we'll see where that goes. And finally, one nice thing that I have to do, and I would like to ask Kathy and Leslin to come up. I have certificates of appreciation in recognition of 10 years of outstanding service to Tompkins County. For Kathy Luz Herrera and Leslie Dean Clare.
You got seniority. You get to go first.
10 years and what? 3 months?
That's right. 3 months on the girl.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I'm sorry.
There you are.
Oh, cool.
Thank you, Kathy.
I appreciate it.
That's my report. Joe Merrick, what? I'm sorry. Thank you, Kathy. I do have one appointment. Peter Stein to the Workforce Investment Board, the chair's appointment. All right.
I didn't hear. I'm sorry.
I've just appointed you to something, Peter. I hope you say it. The Workforce Investment Board. Okay. All right. Thank you. County Administrator Joe Marion.
Thanks, Martha. I'm going to pick up kind of where you left off. The budget is kind of happening in real time now as we came up here. There are reports that there's a framework that's been put together. Apparently that framework, this is in Albany for the state budget, is being presented right now to conference committees. So my guess is when we're done with this meeting, we're going to have a better sense of what might be in this budget plan. It certainly will include a tax cap rent control, tuition hikes, What we hear is it will not include gay marriage, but it looks like they are locking and loading right now on a final budget. I think by tomorrow or Thursday, we will have a budget that is largely done by the state, and they will go home. In there, again, will be a cap. I think it's a certainty that there will be a cap in there. We don't know yet what's going to be in that cap in the way of carve-outs and exceptions and so forth. You may recall that in the Assembly bill, they allowed for an adjustment for real growth in our tax base. There was an adjustment for token, kind of a token adjustment for pension changes. So the 2% may vary a bit by the time we're done from the 2%. As you recall, the fiscal targets that you set at the last meeting are based on a 2% cap. That's at one end of the spectrum, so the most aggressive cuts would occur if there was only a 2% increase in our property tax levy. And then we set another end of that spectrum at 5.4%, if you recall. We asked us to build a budget based on 5.4% a tax levy increase. My plan is, and I guess I'd like a nod of the heads, if the tax cap allows for a little bit of an increase above that 2%, I mean, it could be 2.5% by the time it's all done. What I'd like to do is to get to the department heads and let them know that we can increase the bottom end of their targets by that adjustment factor. So let's say the levy was allowed to go up by 3%. That would mean that instead of having to cut a lot of numbers here, 11.2% of their targeted expenses, they would only have to cut 10.2% of their targeted expenses. That's the bottom end of the spectrum. I would like to just inform department heads that they have the latitude to do that without new legislation that gives that authority. At the upper end, nothing would change. Those numbers would stay the same. So if that seems reasonable, I would like to do that. And again, over the next 3 or 4 days, we should have a much better understanding of what the cap represents. Last item on my list, the retreat. We're getting close to finding a good date for the retreat. It looks like the week of the 11th will work. We have a couple of dates where we can get almost all of you there, and I'd like to talk to those of you who have conflicts on those dates to see if we can somehow resolve that. So we're shooting for, it looks like midweek, the week of July 11th for a retreat to talk about priorities. And that's my report.
Thank you, Joe. Any questions, any comments on the issue of that, about the cap? Brian?
Yeah, just one. I believe, and I certainly can't speak for everybody, but the resolution that we passed with 2% was done with that being the cap. Certainly, if it goes up, that would probably be the starting point. I don't know if we need to redo the resolution if that happens. I don't know, but... we will certainly keep the 5.4 as the top end target, but I would think that as the cap goes up, certainly that would go up.
I would agree with you, Brian. My sense is that the 5.4 was the recommended level that we were looking for, so that's the one that kind of has more weight.
Yes.
If that makes any sense, Dooley.
Yeah, I agree with Brian. I think that it's important for the department heads to have that tiny bit of breathing room given to them right away, if it exists.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you, Joe. County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
I have no report.
Thank you. Finance Director David Squires.
I distributed in your box tonight the current update on sales tax. Happy to report that we're ahead of budget by, I guess, about $100,000. At the end of May, 5 months, we are up 3.89%. And overall sales tax distributions within the county were up a little lower, actually 3.88% year-to-date for all participants. For the county, it was 3.89%. For the municipalities, the amount we distribute, their distributions are up 7%, and the city is basically flat year-to-date. The other issue, I want to remind everybody that this Thursday night, the county is having hosting an auction to dispose of some tax foreclosure properties. It's a joint auction with the city of Ithaca. It's at 7 o'clock on Thursday night at the Human Services Building. There are three city properties, about five county properties on for sale. This is the first time we've had, and it was also a unique thing that the district attorney has asked us to dispose of two properties that were forfeited as a result of arrest and plea arrangements on drugs. So that's my report.
Thank you, David. Any questions? Okay. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Peter and Jimmy.
I'd like to, on behalf of the Public Safety Committee, I'd like to add to the agenda an item which has been passed out, I believe, entitled Endorsement of Legislative Bills S-5804 and A-8290A relating to service retirement benefits for persons engaged in criminal law employed in the office of Tompkins County District Attorney. This is a technicality.
Is there a second? Pat seconds that.
This is a technicality having to do with the timing of the resolution that was passed at the last legislative meeting.
Okay, right. All in favor of adding Resolution P, it should be in your red folders, to the agenda. Please raise your hand. One, two, three. Well, hold up your hands. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12. Opposed? Two opposed. That passes 12 to 2. And thank you, Peter. Jim?
Yes. Thank you, Martha. I would like to remove Resolution A concerning the authorizing of Tompkins County to pay the difference in pay between military pay and base county salary to county officers and employees while performing ordered military duty.
All right. And Carol?
Yeah, I'd like to ask your forbearance to introduce a resolution that's not on the agenda, the award of bid, CR 130 Newfield Depot Road Bridge Replacement. It's in the town of Newfield.
Do I have to read the numbers? Dave seconds that.
Yeah, it. We expected to bring this in August. Bids have been opened, came in very nicely, and the contractor is asked, rather than waiting until August, that that they be able to get started. So I'm hoping that you'll let us move that tonight.
All in favor of adding that to the agenda, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Anything else? All right, I will read through the consent agenda, what's left of it, and please let me know if you want anything taken, removed from that agenda. Resolution B, authorization to accept New York State Child Passenger Safety Grant, Sheriff's Office. Resolution C, authorization to enter into a 5-year extension of a lease agreement with the Alcohol and Drug Council of Tompkins County, Incorporated. Resolution D, authorizing primary school family support contract. Resolution E, budget adjustment, social services. Resolution F, establishing standard workday for elected and appointed officials, county clerk, and appointments to the Developmental Disabilities Subcommittee, Jeffrey Douglas Bowles, and Tompkins Cortland Community College Board of Trustees, Joanne Volpe Florino. Is there a motion on the consent agenda? Frank moves, Will seconds. All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. Now, as I said, I want to move things around so some staff and a couple of people can go home. Is Carl Haynes in the hall, or is he there?
Yes.
Okay. Then I'm going to ask Jim to... Hi, Carl. I'm going to ask Jim to take Resolution G.
Thank you. Adoption of the 2011-2012 operating budget, Tompkins Cortland Community College, and I would move that.
And Mike seconds that. Is there any discussion? All right. Dooley.
Is it possible to add the dollar amount that Tompkins County and the Cortland County shares are?
Yes, it is.
I don't have it.
I believe it's $2.6 million from Tompkins County and $1.6 million from Cortland County.
Okay. Okay.
And for the public, that's related to the share of distribution of students from each county. Or while Carl is looking, Mike?
I just wanted to mention that we may not have a lot of questions tonight, but we actually had a budget presentation at TC3, which was attended not only by our county legislators, but also county legislators from Cortland County. A lot of questions were asked. A lot of discussion was had afterwards with Cortland, our counterparts over there. So even though we may not have a whole lot of things tonight, we are not adopting this without a lot of thought.
Thank you, Mike. That is true. Carl, do you have the answer yet?
I do. Tompkins County share is $2,680,596. So Jim was very close. And Cortland County, $1,574,319. As you know, that ratio is a three-year average and sometimes changes, but our best estimate right now is that the ratio is not going to change, so those numbers should be fairly firm.
Thank you. Leslie, and then Kathy. And
Kathy first.
Kathy, Leslie, Jim.
Thank you. For the public and to jog my own memory, could y'all remind me if this represents any increase and roughly what the percentage increase is?
There's
over
no
last year's budget.
Oh, the budget or the sponsor share?
I'm sorry, the contribution.
The sponsor share is not increasing. It's the same as last year. Actually, it's the same as the last two or three years, I think. And it does, we have got a budget here that has an additional 6% cut in state aid for a total of 21% over the past 18 months. So, as I think the board knows from our budget presentations, we've had significant staff reductions, operational reductions, and a whole host of changes that we've made to accommodate the reduced funding. At the same time, the college continues to grow and serve more students. So that's been our challenge, and I know we've briefed you on that, but I can obviously answer additional questions related to that if you'd like.
Thank you for that summary.
Leslie, and then Jim.
Kathy, oh, that's one.
Carl, I...
Oh, wait, Jim.
I
didn't have a question. I actually did want to say thanks to TC3. It's been a rough year, and you and your staff and faculty for taking the time to really make the cuts where you needed to make those cuts so that we can come in at the place where there's no change in the amount of contribution we get from the county. It will be helpful if the public knows where they can take a look at that budget so they can see that for themselves.
I think once the budget's approved, we can put the budget online. Mm-hmm. Frankly, from the public standpoint, looking at all these numbers, it may not be particularly informative.
The friendly version.
I did share with the Board of Trustees a fairly detailed listing of how we have accommodated the various staffing cuts. Mm-hmm. And that is on the web. If they go to the Board of Trustees website, I think I shared that in January. Obviously, it's still a work in progress, but that would give people a pretty good sense of where the cuts have occurred and the steps that we're taking to accommodate the reduction in staff that we've experienced. But, we're doing a lot with the lean office initiatives. I know you're doing that here at the mm-hmm. county level as well. We've done some restructuring. Use of technology has been very important to some of the changes mm-hmm. we're making. And frankly, a lot of people just kind of stepping up and doing good work.
Thank you. Jim, and then Carol.
Carl, your overall budget went up 1.5%.
Correct. Yeah.
So that should be, factored into all that you've heard so far. Thank you.
Carol.
Yeah. I also wanted to thank Carl and his staff for doing such a good job, continuing to increase what they can for students and maintain their effort in the face of just ridiculous budget realities. And if this is incorrect, you can correct me. But as I understand it, one of the I just want to point out another of the appalling things that we have learned about New York State and its policies. Hearing that you've got us, 5 or 6% cut from the state, my understanding of this policy is that they get to cut you by that amount, but if we cut you by even a dollar, they then don't have to continue funding you or can cut you further?
Not quite, but you're on to the right idea. So let me try to explain that. In the legislation that supports community colleges, there's a requirement that's referred to as a maintenance of effort, that the sponsors need to do, okay, or we're not allowed to have more of our budget, more than one-third of our budget, derived from student revenue. Well, as you know, over the course of the last several years, okay, in this time period of state cutbacks, tuitions have gone up. Students are now paying, in our case, 50% rather than the one-third that they should be paying. And by the way, we're kind of middle of the road. There's some community colleges around the state where the students are paying upwards of over 60% of the cost of attending the community college. To me, that's unconscionable when you think in terms of what it's supposed to be at the one-third level. But we would have to reduce that portion of our revenue that represents tuition revenue beyond the one-third, and that's a number of $6.5 million. So that's the impact. If you were to cut us $1, we would have to reduce this budget by $6.5 million and cut tuition to accommodate that, but the loss of revenue would be devastating.
Well, I certainly support your budget. I support us doing this, and if Teresa Ault is still in the audience, she should add it to the list of grievances about New York State and policies, because it is just puts us, puts you, puts the taxpayers of New York State in just an unconscionable position. So thank you for doing what you can with the realities.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. Brian and then Jim.
Carol, thanks for that explanation. That was my question, too, or comment, because for the people that are really paying attention, in these days where, we've got budget reductions, budget cuts, possibly program cuts, mm-hmm. For somebody to look at this and say, well, wait a minute, what about TC3? They now know that we really have our hands tied in and we all know from going to the budget presentations the amount of effort that you and your staff have had to go through just to get to that. So thanks.
Thank you, Brian. I just might want to highlight, too, that the 1.5% that Jim referenced here, when you look at the actual operational portion of our budget, in other words, what we call our contractuals here in the budget that you have in front of you tonight, our equipment and salaries and benefits, salaries at least, there's an $800,000 cut in those areas. That's the stuff that's really helping us run the college, if you will. The increase, all of the increase, is in the fringe benefit area. $800,000 of the $1 million figure that you see there is all mandated either by the state and or health insurance increases. So it wasn't anything that we could control. We had to accommodate that $800,000. So I just want to kind of put that in perspective. Even though there's a 1.5% increase in our bottom line, there's nearly a 2% cut in the overall operating portion of the budget, and that's just this year. That doesn't reflect the other adjustments we've made in the last 18 months that have exceeded $2.5 million. So we've taken our hits along with everybody mm-hmm. else.
Jim and then Peter.
I did not mention as I moved the resolution that I've been going out there 5 years listening to Carl and his staff talk about the budget, and there isn't a group in the community who gets it any better than they do when it comes to dealing with New York State, who we deal with also, and they're able to, with some very clever and thoughtful administration, be able to hear from us when we go there and say, look, we're not really very happy if there's going to be a big increase, and they have worked diligently to hear us and maintain a quality program for community college students. So I just wanted to add that.
Thanks, Jim. Peter.
Carl, just to orient me a little bit, what actually is the tuition for a full-time student? That's not question number one. And question number two is, it's my understanding is that that keeps going up every year. Are you starting to see significant number of students who are deterred from a full-time attendance because of the cost?
Well, let me answer the first question first. Tuition next year, okay, is reflected in this budget, will be $3,950 per year, okay? So, and that is a 5% increase over last year. So tuitions have been going up. Again, I might comment, I just came last week from a president meeting of our community college presidents, and again, there's some, at least a couple community colleges in the state that are going up 9% in their tuition for next year. Let me say this to your second part of your question. We are seeing a slowdown in the rate of growth. I don't think that's related to tuition, because our tuition at the community college, and all this is, by the way, what I'm going to say is true for all of the community colleges in the state, is still well below the TAP awards that students can get, who are particularly the most neediest students, which is at $5,000. You know, the legislature threatened to cut that this year, and that did get restored in the final budget. So students who are needy, and, you know, it's a sliding scale in terms of how need is determined, could have as much as 100% of that tuition paid for by the TAP program or, you know, some portion thereof. I don't think it's the cost. However, there's other cost factors. I don't think it's tuition, I should say, but there's other cost factors that go into going to college, okay, whether it's housing and books and living expenses and so on. And it's to the point now where the number of graduates leaving TC3 today, okay, this past year, for example, and I don't have a hard number on that, but I would say significantly more of those students today will graduate with some level of debt compared to 10 years ago when it was probably negligible. And I think we're beginning to see people now thinking, I'm not sure I want to take on any debt, whether it's the students or the parents. So that I think is kind of what's really going on, and that's perhaps deterring some people. And that's a great concern, I think, and should be a great concern to all of us. But our tuition is still, you know, community college tuitions are still the best deal in town. You know, I'm saying that, you know, generally speaking, okay, we're a bargain. And so I don't think tuition is itself a deterrent, but the overall costs and the reluctance of, and that's just kind of my own reading of the thing, because we're seeing a lot of young people who may have gone to other colleges, okay, coming to the community college because of the cost there. And that's attributed to a lot of the increases. We've had significant increases, and we've doubled in the last 12 years, as you know, in our enrollment. But this past year, several community colleges saw declines. We didn't. Our enrollment for fall is still up at this point in time compared to last year. I don't know whether that will hold throughout the summer, but it is something that's of concern, I think.
Thank you, Carl. Are we ready to vote? All in favor of Resolution G, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much, Carl.
Thank you.
All right.
Appreciate it.
You bet. I'd like to shuffle to Resolution Q. Are you folks ready? No. All right. Let's see, Paula, are you just here for the... She's just here for resolution. Mike, this is yours, I believe. Bear with us, folks. The compliance one. Resolution M. Where'd Mike go?
Yeah.
Okay, Carol. Resolution Q. Bill, come on in. We're switching. We're jumping to you.
Thank you. I'm making sure I understand.
Okay. Just
okay.
We don't need a long explanation, I'm pretty sure. So just
okay.
Go ahead and move it.
We have had on our I move the resolution Q, the award of bid CR-130 Newfield Depot Road Bridge Replacement, bin 331-4380, pin 3753.21, Town of Newfield.
Is there a second? Leslin seconds. Don't say anything. Are there any questions? Ready to vote. All in favor of the resolution Q, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Bill.
All right, Mike, could you take resolution M so that Paula can go home?
Yes, I think I'm... Is this the one that's revised?
Uh-huh. Yes.
I think I'm moving the revised version that we adopted at the Government Operations Committee. Adopting an exclusion screening policy as an addition to the county compliance program and to the formal policies and procedures of the Tompkins County government. I so move.
And Pat seconds. Are there any questions? Dooley.
Did an additional definition get added to the policy? Do you know?
I'm sorry, Dooley?
Did an additional definition, governing board definition, get added to the policy?
All right, Paula?
Yes, I think so.
Dooley, there was an explanation, but it was included under the policy itself and not in the definition section. So if you'd look at the opening section of the policy where we actually describe what we mean by governing boards, and there's a paren statement there, initially the county legislature, community mental health service board, and the board of health. So that was consistent with the discussion we had in GO, but we didn't single it out as a definition. It was embedded in the policy.
Thank you.
All right, are we ready to vote on revised M? Please raise your hand if you're in favor. Any opposed? That's unanimous. All right, thank you, Mike. Thank you, Paula. All right, I see Marianne Banks there. I'm going to go to Health and Human Services Committee and ask Frank, would you first take
the
one that Marianne's waiting for? What?
The J one?
Yes, that's right.
I'd like to move Resolution J, appropriation from contingent fund, COPS, community option, preventive services contracts. If I get a second, I'll explain.
Okay. Seconded by Will.
You should have a revision that, not to the resolution, but an explanation that Joe distributed earlier today with regard to an explanation of how the monies break down. There was a little confusion on this. Joe, would you take a minute and just explain the numbers?
Sure. When we first came to committee, I think the prevailing understanding was that this was enough money to get through September of this year. This is that grant program that only runs, it runs on a federal fiscal year, so this, again, the prevailing understanding was this is enough to get through this current federal fiscal year. In fact, that understanding was not correct, that this is enough money to carry these programs through the end of the calendar year. So as we tried to explain in the email that went out today, that's an important distinction. You should know that this still is intended to allow an orderly wind down of these programs supported by a COPS grant that fell from $302,000, that was our estimate of COPS revenue for 2011, down to $87,000. So with this, if you were to approve this resolution, the five programs that are referenced in your resolution will be sustained over the course of this year. I think the easy arithmetic, there's a lot of complicated arithmetic on here. I think we can make that simpler just by noting that our 2011 budget had $302,000 of COPS revenue in it. That supported $518,000 in program costs. That's the way we budgeted. However, now, knowing what we know about COPS revenue, the COPS revenue is falling to $87,154. So we're trying to replace that loss of COPS revenue to support these programs to, again, carry us through the end of the year. So it would involve an appropriation of $214,933 in contingency funds to support this. You've heard DSS say that they will make every effort to make sure, first of all, these allocations are right. They're far lower than what was projected. So there's an effort going to be made to make sure that they're right. If we find that there's more money available than was expected, that money, that excess, will be turned back to the county. DSS will also be working to find ways to minimize this gap. And again, to the extent that these monies aren't required to support the programs, they'll be turned back to the county.
Thanks, Joe. Martha, one more sentence here. The five agencies and programs that this supports are the Advocacy Center, Preventive Youth Services, Cooperative Extension, the Parenting Education, Daycare Council, Child and Family Development, Probation Department, the Pre-PINS, Preventive Services, and Tompkins Community Action, the Primary School Family Support. Just a reminder, remember when we began earlier this year, we were looking at that spread that Joe gave us regarding the what the potential hit was at the state level, and we were working with quite a large number, about $1 million or so. We were reminded that some of that, because the state's fiscal year, their budget year is different than ours, some of it would reach back into our calendar year 2010. And indeed, that's exactly what's happening with some of this money. Some of this is reflective of 2010. So we're having to absorb another blessing from the state of New York. Thanks, Martha.
I'm going to jump in for a second. So, Joe, the program's worth $518,000.
Correct.
We used to get $302,000.
Correct.
That's been cut by 71%. If we want to continue those programs next year, is there any other agency or anybody else who will pick that service up?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
So we're putting $215,000 in just for the balance of this year, and those preventive services that will help parents who are in trouble, help kids who are having trouble in school, the Advocacy Center, those programs will go away, correct?
Yes.
Unless we find other property tax funds to go in there. That's what I wanted to know. Thank you. Dooley, and then Carol, and then Jim.
I'd like to ask if you would consider expanding the resolution to include what you and Joe have just explained, so that between the first and second whereases, it will say, whereas the programs supported include, and just list the programs, and then in the third whereas, which talks about the result of the department's potential revenue from that source is $87,154, significantly less than the $302,087 that was anticipated in the county budget. Because as I understand it, the resolution does not include the complicated charts on this page. So I'd like to get those facts in the resolution, if that's okay.
Joe, I don't have a problem with that, do you?
So that's friendly. No. Will, do you second it? That's friendly to Will.
Is that okay?
And make sure Kathy has what you're talking about. Carol, and then Jim?
Yeah. Some of these are programs that I think that I fought for during the budget process last year, that we restored full funding to them. I'd just like to understand, but now we're being asked to step up even further. What happens if we don't do this? What month do they go away with no preparation to figure out what to do?
Well, the 30-day notices have been sent to all these affected agencies, because if you chose not to approve this, there would have to be a 30-day notice given to all the agencies that funding would be discontinued. So that notice has gone out just as a fail-safe. So it would really be an almost immediate shutdown of funding for these programs, and maybe the programs, I think almost certainly the programs themselves. The other milestone date would be at the end of the federal fiscal year. So if you chose just to provide enough money to carry through September 30th, it's approximately $160,000 that would be required just to do that. And then the last $50,000 or so is what is needed to carry these programs through the end of the calendar year.
And then what happens in the upcoming budget discussions and the budget that will come to us if we do this? Does this become part of their base below which they have to reduce by whatever horrible percentage it is that they're all being asked to reduce for the upcoming 2012 budget? Or are they still, is their base budget their, where they start from, yeah, still where it was at in our budget assumptions this year?
Well, since the revenues affect local, this, I think their target remains their target. At the same time, if they're looking at trying to sustain these programs with really minimal or no COPS revenue, this will be a very difficult thing for them to sustain next year. A budget decision, but obviously very difficult to sustain this without other, you know, state and federal aid.
And four of these are contracts, and the probation amount is our staff.
It's our staff.
Do you know how? It's $155,000, if I understand it correctly. Do you know? That's about two staff people?
Two or three staff people.
Okay. I think I had Jim this.
I think I want to hear from the department, if there's a rep here, that this money will continue and cover us until 12/31, because it was pretty clear to me at a meeting ago that it was going to take us through September or the end of September, and I just want to make certain that this is, you know, will cover us through the rest of the year.
I apologize for the confusion over how far the $215,000 would cover us. And if you allocate that amount from the contingency fund, it will cover us through, cover these programs through December 31st.
Thank you. And there's no need to apologize. It was, you know, I wanted to make certain that, that you would be covered as we move through the end of the year.
All right. Any other discussion or questions? Ready to vote on resolution J, with the addition that was made. Is a short roll call. Go ahead.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yeah.
Ms. McAsey?
Yes.
Would anyone like to be recorded as no? Okay, that's unanimous. Thanks, Marianne. Thanks very much. Frank, would you just take care of Resolution I for us, please?
I will. Resolution okay. I, appropriation. Resolution I, appropriation from contingent fund and budget adjustment, home care, health department, and I so move.
There's a second. Second by Will.
This is, may I, Martha? Yes. This is the appropriation from contingent fund to continue the community home health aid program, home care program, excuse me, the CHA, as we had agreed through the rest of this year. This is the appropriation that moves it out of contingency into the operating budget.
Thank you, Frank. Any questions? Ready to vote. It's a short roll call.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Ms. McAsey?
Yes.
Would anyone wish to be recorded as no? That's unanimous. Okay, Sigrid and Brenda, y'all can go home now, right? All right. The next resolution I would like to deal with is Resolution K. However, we all do better with a five-minute break at this part of the meeting. So I think you all would rather we have a quality discussion because we've taken a break than that people get antsy and step
them
out of the room to take their own break. So
you better tell them what Resolution K is. They may not okay. know.
So we will. Excuse me. Excuse me. We didn't recess yet. We will reconvene at 25 of and take Resolution K, which is the CHA resolution. Thank you. We're in recess.